Everybody, welcome to another Comic Source Comic Boom collaboration. As you can see from the giant logo there, we're here to talk some absolute power. Got a press release today, as we're recording this on Wednesday, with a huge amount of information about some stuff that's coming up with Absolute Power. We know it's an event that is coming up later this year. We know that Mark Waid is, I guess for lack of a better term, we'll say the showrunner. And so DC released a bunch of information that we're going to basically go over and let you guys know kind of what to expect. Very Amanda Waller-esque, Amanda Waller-centric event. And I got to admit, as much as I dislike Waller, I'm starting to have a little bit of, I don't want to say feels, but could I actually feel bad for Amanda Waller? Could I actually find her to be a sympathetic character? I mean, there's hints. It probably won't work out. She'll find a way to screw it up. This feels like a big DC event that feels more like a DC event than what we had last year with Night Terrors. And what I mean by that, Night Terrors, DC tried to lean into the whole popularity of horror comics lately, and I just didn't feel that worked out particularly well. I mean, and I'm being polite when I put it that way, because honestly, it was just so bad. But this feels more like a traditional DC event. What do you think, Rocky?
Yeah, it's very much so. Very much so. I choose to be optimistic about Amanda Waller. I have been scolded by some of the listeners to our DC reviews. I've been politely scolded in some of the comments on the Comic Boom on the YouTube channel about maybe too much Amanda Waller dislike. But I'm optimistic. Reading the solicitations, maybe I'll be able to develop some sympathy for Amanda Waller, because I do think that I've questioned the manner in which DC has sort of handled the character leading into this event. But you know, there are still many comics to read, and one particular comic that we'll talk about that will focus on the character more and more. And hey, I mean, I need to get into the head of Amanda Waller a little bit more to truly sympathize with the character, if in fact that's what DC wants us to do, because I'm not quite there yet, but I'm holding out hope. So
yeah, I mean, same, right? I don't know that there's a bigger Amanda Waller hater than myself, I guess, but I'm trying to be a little more objective. I'm trying to think of, like, and honestly, you know, I got this press release and it was the covers. It was a couple of the covers on one of the series that we'll talk about that made me stop and think, you know, like, here's the thing. We always talk about when a comic book doesn't come together, a particular project or whatever. And we criticize, but we always try to be respectful and understand there's a person behind that, you know, creator name. There's an actual human behind the writing credit, the art credit, lettering, coloring, whatever. And so you never want to attack personally, right? Like, you can criticize the work, but it's never, you got to kind of put yourself in the shoes of the creator and realize, hey man, they did their best. I get that Amanda Waller is a fictional person, so I don't necessarily feel that obligation to you know, put myself in their shoes. They're not really a human behind her that has emotions and feelings, but it's sort of the same concept, right? Like, walk a mile in her shoes, maybe you would feel the same way. And there's hints of that possibly to come. So it all kicks off with the Free Comic Day event that is coming up. Free Comic Book Day, for those that don't know, it's a day where retailers, they still have to pay for the comics. It's the first Saturday in May every year, but they give out the comics for free. They pay for them from the publisher. Usually they're a lot less than a regular book, you know, like 25 cents or what have you. And it's a way to drum up interest, get people into comic shops. Unfortunately, I think it was great when it first started. It sort of lost its luster. And I know there's comic shops out there now that still celebrate Free Comic Book Day, but they don't even give out any of the free books. They have other advanced sales and you know, what they do. Cause you know, the whole idea was you'd go into a comic shop and you'd pick up a couple of these free books, but then you'd also purchase stuff. And it's kind of the point where people, they just show up, they get the free stuff and they just leave. And oftentimes they're not even taking the free stuff, that they're throwing it on the ground, throwing it in the trash, whatever. So it just ends up being kind of this waste of money. But be that as it may, Marvel and DC do heavily lean into it. This is the launch for the event, May 4th. We've got Dan Mora handling the covers. Mark Waid, as I mentioned, is kind of the showrunner of it. He's writing it. Mikel Yanin is doing the art on the inside. It's going to recap a lot of what's been going on that we've been talking about in our DC spotlights every week, that the events that have led up to Absolute Power. And it's going to have a sneak peek of Absolute Power number one. So I'm really looking forward to that. Although I will say that over the years, the free comic book day titles that do tie into events, they tend to feel less important now than they used to. It really used to feel like the first chapter of the story, but maybe because free comic book days lost its luster a little bit, it does end up being like a recap and I don't know, a lot of promotional material. Yeah, I don't know. You probably need to read it, but at the end of the day, if you skip it, I think you'll be able to catch up relatively quickly. I don't know. What are your thoughts on it, Rocky?
Well, it introduces us and confirming the DC's Trinity of Evil. It's when most of the time when we think of Trinity, we think of Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman, of course. And what's ironic about this series, at free com introduced with Free Comic Book Day, this Absolute Power, is that the Trinity is this Queen Brainiac, Failsafe, and Amanda Waller. And it's hard to escape the irony of, Absolute Power being about, this agenda, spearheaded by these Trinity of villains to basically, take the powers away from the superhumans. And yet the only human amongst the villains is Amanda Waller. So, once again, to focus on Amanda Waller a little bit, I'm really curious with Queen Brainiac and Failsafe and Amanda Waller. It's a very interesting array of villains, and I find a hard time on the surface right now without knowing more. I just find it hard to believe that all these three villains will be able to find something in common and work together cohesively, because they're all control freaks, they're all narcissistic in their own way. And so it's going to be very interesting to see if these three villains, this Trinity of Evil, can actually work together. So I'm de it definitely captivates my interest, and as you said, it's probably, as a premise, far more interesting and a summer event than we've certainly had in the last few years with DC Comics.
Yeah, it's a good point. They're all egomaniacs. Can they work together? The only thing I can think, or right now with what little I know, it's like, okay, well, they're all getting something they want, right? Like villains, heroes, they no longer have powers on Earth. That's what Amanda Waller wants. That only, as far as we know, is going to apply to humans, right? Which it's interesting because not all the heroes and villains are human. But my point being that Failsafe is not going to mind, because he's still probably going to have his powers. And from Brainiac's perspective, Earth is no longer a threat to him going out and harvesting species in the galaxy. And so he would get what he wants. So that's kind of how I'm working it in my head right now for them to work together. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see how it all works out. So May 4th for that. And then the next chapter of the story, Absolute Power Ground Zero, which will be released on June 25th. You can see some of the covers there. I especially like that cover. I guess it's Wayne Manor, where it looks like it's burning, and you've got the Trinity hanging on the wall there. You've got a great look at Failsafe. You've got a great look at Superman in his black costume, which is interesting. And then I guess that other cover, I guess that's Amanda Waller talking to something, right? And when we look at the teaser here, if you go to the show notes, everybody, all these, everything, the article, the press release, and whatever is there. So you can see this for yourself if you want to take a look later. But it mentions Waller finding the key to capturing all the metahuman powers on the planet. It talks about bringing together the events of Batman. So that's obviously the Failsafe stuff that's been going on. Superman and Action Comics, which would be the House of Brainiac event that's going on right now. And Suicide Squad Dream Team, which Nicole Maines is writing, that has Amanda Waller doing something in Gamora, trying to get technology or something along those lines. So my thought being, I think it was it in the most recent Superman that we just reviewed this week, where Amanda was talking to Tio Maro, and he was working on incorporating a mother box, that apocalyptic technology, into some sort of cyborg robot, what have you. Could that be the key, mixing some tech from Gamora with tech from Apocalypse? We know Amazo is going to be a part of this series. It seems like that is going to be the kind of the big event or the big character, the big plot point, I guess you'd say, that's going to kick
Yeah.
this off. So we've got Mark Wade's and Nicole Maines and Joshua Williamson, along with Chip Zdarsky, writing it. And then Gleb Melnikoff, V. Ken Marion, and Skylar Patridge listed as artists. I don't know if it's one big story they all worked on together, or it's going to be a series of smaller stories, kind of an anthology.
Well, it should be remembered that Mark Waid and Dan Mora, they did do a World's Finest story arc that involved Amazo, and sort of an adventure dealing with him, as you said. And so Mark Waid, to his credit, I mean, he did do the Lazarus Planet event. I mean, a lot of these events, at least one of them, has had its origins in the World's Finest comic. And he is pretty good. I've always thought Mark Wade is fairly good at handling events over at Marvel. And the even though I'm not much of a Marvel I'm not much of a Marvel zombie anymore, there was a period of time when I was, and it was Mark Wade that sort of pulled me over there. And I enjoyed some of his he did a couple of Avengers crossover events that I really like. So I have faith in Mark Wade here. And I didn't, although I wasn't a big fan of Lazarus Planet, I will say that some of the better issues were scripted by him. So and just again, we're going to be getting into the solicitations here. This does pleasantly surprise me. I'm pleasantly surprised that, because I thought this was going to be a little bit derivative, but I'm a little bit more optimistic about it now. And these covers are pretty interesting too, that you have up on the screen here. Particularly the Superman in a black costume is interesting. It reminiscent of the return of Superman after he was killed by Doomsday. That's interesting to me. So I'm really curious to, are these covers? I hope they're not just covers that I hope the covers are actually relate to the content of the story. That's my pet peeve with variant covers. I hope these covers actually reflect some aspect of the stories, and that they're not a misdirection.
Where's the mullet, though? That's
Yeah.
what he's missing the mullet.
Good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So next up in terms of the event, we turn the page to July 3rd. We have Absolute Power number one. So this really kicks it off in full force, and it's mentioning that through the combined powers of Failsafe and the Brainiac Queen, that's what's finally given Amanda Waller the ability to capture the powers of every metahuman, supervillain, superhero on Earth, which, chaos just erupts. And they're trying to, much like they did during Dark Crisis on Infinite Earths, or not, sorry, not Dark Crisis, the Titans Beast World, where Amanda Waller was trying to spread disinformation, get the public to have mistrust in the Titans. Seems like that's going to happen as well. And it also mentions the Suicide Squad commander methodically targeting DC's most powerful superheroes. I find it interesting that text there, because it says the Suicide Squad commander. Why wouldn't you just name? So it must be somebody that we wouldn't necessarily expect. So we've got Mark Waid and Dan Mora on the debut issue. As you can see, there's a ton of covers that maybe we can get a little bit of context. There's, almost a portrait of Amanda Waller. There's one of the covers that almost looks like a Scotty Young cover, but it's not him because he's not listed among these variant artists. But it's Amanda Waller as a little kid in a toy box playing with like superhero dolls. At least I think it is, or maybe it's Amanda's daughter, and maybe that's the thing, right? And we'll talk about it here in a little bit. Maybe that's the thing that triggers it. She lost a child or what have you. But again, interesting, because I just speculated, is it Tio Maro and the mother box driven android that is the key? But here we're saying it's Failsafe and Brainiac Queen that have given Amanda Waller. So yeah, that's the thing that for me really may say whether or not, or it may depend on whether or not I see this as a successful event. If I can buy into the way Amanda takes the powers, I can probably buy into the series, right? But if it's super hokey or just feels wonky, I think that's going to bug me. Like if it's just, and they could have gone, it's the reason I've said it all the time. I'm not a big fan of like magic use in comics, right? It could have been as simple as Trigon or Necron or somebody, with that level of power, just anoints Amanda Waller and says, "You have the ability to steal powers." And she goes around stealing people's powers and becomes, uber powerful. Talk about, the laziest, easiest way to do things. So it does seem like, and again, I have faith in Mark Waid like you do. It seems like it's not going to be that. It'll be kind of something that makes a little more sense. At least I hope so. What are your thoughts on how it's going to work? How is she going to be able to steal the powers?
Well, in terms of how Amanda Waller is going to steal the powers, I actually think that I'm not sure. I actually, if I was to venture a guess, I would think that the true powerhouses that are going to be stealing the powers are going to be through Failsafe and the Queen Brainiac, and that Amanda Waller, I mean, she might, who knows? She's got access to all kinds of different tech, and she's always sort of a Deus Ex Machina. She always seems to come up with some weapons here and there. So I'm not really sure. And it might seem odd for me to say, and I'm not trying to avoid your question, but I keep going back that where this story needs to work for me is I think that we're gonna get a lot of cool gadgets and action scenes with the Brainiac, with Brainiac and Failsafe. For Amanda Waller, I want the character. That's where I want the character drama. That's where it needs to nail, because I think that I find it very hard to believe that these three villains are going to be able to maintain cooperation and collaborate and get along throughout this crisis, throughout this event. And Amanda Waller, I think, is she? I mean, she wants control, but when she realizes she's not going to get that, inevitably she's going to come into conflict with Brainiac and Failsafe. I mean, I think that's such a safe bet to make. What's going to happen to Amanda Waller? How far gone is she? When Brainiac brought her back from Earth 3 to seemingly pursue this agenda of taking away the powers, what's the true motivation? Is there more to it? And what happens when Amanda Waller loses controls and truly sees the consequences of a world without superpowers, without a hero? That's where I think. So we're going to get a lot of action. We know that from Failsafe and Brainiac. But you know, to me, the heart of this story, it might end up being Amanda Waller. And boy, wouldn't that be something? And you and I got to eat our words and start liking a character we've grown to hate.
Yeah, I mean, at least I care about her, right? I've said it so many times. The worst thing you can do is just be completely apathetic. So yeah, at least she's a character, and I wouldn't say I love to hate. I don't love to hate anything. I don't like having those negative feelings, but she's just such a plot
And just
point.
to bring you mentioned the cover with what looks to be a young Amanda Waller in a sandbox playing with superhero toys. Like, could it be that now that's probably her daughter? Maybe it's not Amanda Waller, but I think symbolically, is it the idea that maybe Waller wasn't so jaded? Maybe there was a time when Amanda Waller did, in fact, believe in superheroes and believe that, you know, and was more optimistic, and until something happened that the bloom came off the rose, so to speak. What was that pivotal event? And of course, we're going to be getting to that, fortunately, and you'll be getting to that in a moment in terms of fortunately, another comic that will delve into the origin, perhaps give us more information about Amanda Waller. And thank God, because I say again, I need that. I need more of the motivation of Amanda Waller here. And I think we're going to be getting it if these solicitations are in fact truthful and not misleading.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, there's been so many reboots since Amanda Waller first appeared way back, spinning out of Legends with the new Suicide Squad back in like 1987, right? That Amanda Waller did have a family, did have at least one child that she lost to sort of gang violence on the streets. And her whole thing was, you know, superheroes don't care about the little guy. And that was kind of her motivation. But we've never gotten like a definitive origin of Amanda Waller throughout all these different changes in the DC universe, the reboots. You know, I don't know that we ever got a definitive origin for her, even in the New 52. So yeah, could it be, you know, much like what kicked off Civil War, right, over in Marvel, but back in the day when the New Warriors had a reality TV show and they went and tried to capture some villains, and Nuke, you know, this villain that has nuclear powers exploded and it blew up an elementary school and a bunch of kids died. And that's what kicked off the Civil War. Could be something similar, right? Amanda Waller blaming the loss of a child on superheroes. No one should have superpowers, too dangerous, that sort of thing. So yeah, it could work.
And we should say that we know that Amanda Waller already has one family member, a nephew is Deadeye, isn't he? Isn't that the character Deadeye? Or and so she and we he she treats him, she manipulates him, she treats him quite badly, and he's a family member, and she doesn't really seem to show a lot of love for him, not really. So like you said, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, and I've gotten into this debate with others at, well, at my local shop. I mean, they think, you know. You kind of got me onto the sort of the more I thought about Amanda Waller, the more I just really grown. I she's been so consistently easy to dislike. I think DC does have their work ahead of them. Mark Waid has his work ahead of him, or I guess maybe specifically John Ridley to make me care for Amanda Waller. But hey, man, I'm up to be convinced.
Yeah, well, I do find it interesting, you know, we to go back one series, you're talking about the Ground Zero, Nicole Maines, which, you know, oh my God, Nicole Maines is super talented. We were very impressed with their first issue of Suicide Squad Dream Team. Second issue felt a little more like setup, but still, you know, quality work. She's already helping out on a big event, and we can see from the last issue of Suicide Squad Dream Team that she's already kind of setting the groundwork, laying the foundation, if you will, to maybe a more sympathetic Amanda Waller. So we'll have to see. So following that first week of July, where we get kind of the first of 4 issues of the main spine series for the event, I guess you'd say Absolute Power number one. Next up, we have Task Force 7. So this is going to be a bi-weekly series. So I think it's going to be 4 issues, and we're going to get the first one. Let me make sure that I, sorry, make sure I have the right. Yeah, that's the right graphics up. So we're getting the first issue on July 10th. Written by Leah Williams, art is by Caitlin Yarsky, and it introduces the Last Son. So this is what appears to be kind of the Amazo slash apocalypse mother box kind of technology, maybe programmed by Failsafe. I don't know, some kind of amalgamation of all those different things. And it's the threat, the weapon that takes out the threat of Superman and his allies in Metropolis. And once it does that, it moves on to taking on the Shazam family. So you can see, if you're watching the graphic right there on YouTube, you can see the Shazam family featured on one of the covers. So really exciting. I love that a lot of these tech weapons that are being developed, we're getting some covers that are really awesome, where it's almost like a design type cover. And I want to go back just for 1 second to the previous image and point out, like, if you watch us on YouTube, you look at the cover that has Batman in the corner there, just that's next to my head, basically. And you can see the Amazo. You can tell it's Amazo because he's got the widow's peak. And, you know, Amazo's hair was like the little ro like rolls looking thing. You can see that in the robot as well. So, yeah, like I said, clearly Amazo, which Rocky mentioned, I had forgotten about. Yeah, Mark Waid and Dan Mora already did a giant Amazo arc. So the fact that it's Tio Maro who built Amazo, and this apocalypse technology, the mother box and Failsafe, I like it. I like the, you mentioned it earlier, Rocky, the kind of the gadgets. Really curious to see, because these are toys that can be picked up later and played with by other writers. It doesn't have to be a big giant event like Absolute Power, but, you know, cool characters, cool designs by Dan Mora that hopefully we see, you know, later down the line that can be threats.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I like the name The Last Son. What a curious name. I mean, and the solicitation suggests that it's the Last Son is Waller's living weapon. And so you ask the question, you know, what weapon will Amanda Waller have? What tech will she bring to the table? What it appears to be this Last Son character. Is this Last Son character, it probably is it like based on Amazo tech, or what exactly is it? It's interesting. Even the last name, Last Son, you know, I wonder if Amanda Waller is the one who names the weapon the Last Son. Is that, you know, the last, like, Superman is often seen as the last son of, you know, the last son of Krypton. Is that sort of like a way of Amanda Waller naming her weapon and then as her way of spiting Superman, or just spiting, you know, as the ultimate superhero icon. It's a curious name, and it sort of hints at maybe an inner conflict or a hypocrisy of Waller, you know, wanting to take away all the superpowers, and yet the only way to do that is to create a superpowered entity itself. And then that age-old question, well, who controls the superhumans? Who controls the power? And of course, Amanda Waller has an answer for that, and it's probably not Brainiac and Failsafe. Waller wants power for herself, but is there going to be a moment where Amanda Waller maybe second guesses herself? I have a hard time believing that. I really do, because no matter what happens, what I hope doesn't happen in this event is at the end of it, oh, well, Amanda Waller, I mean, will this event just end with Amanda Waller just, you know, switching sides at the last minute, saving the day, and then going back to working for the government again with no consequence? I hope there's consequences to Amanda Waller, good or bad. I just want there to be consequences. I don't want it to be business as usual again for Amanda Waller, because then it will lack verisimilitude to me. And I don't need her to, you know, I'm not so vindictive that I want Amanda Waller to be killed or anything like that, but I do want there to be some consequence to what she's done, more so than just sort of like she disappears and then reappears again in 6 months. But I don't know. I don't want to play script doctor at this point. I just want to remain hopeful, because this is the DC universe after all.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I don't want her to show up 6 months, you know, if she disappears, sneaks away, whatever, escapes, and then, yeah, she shows back up and is doing the same old stuff. I need there to be a change. Either she realizes she's right. I mean, it's interesting you talk about it. She wants power. I mean, she wants power so she can eliminate superpowers on Earth. So if she gets that, if she attains that goal, then does she care if, you know, as long as Brainiac goes away and, you know, Failsafe sticks to Gotham? I mean, maybe she has a plan to shut down Failsafe so he doesn't have powers either. But yeah, it's interesting, because here's the thing. She's always struggled to gain power so she can remove other people's powers. If she actually attained her goal, then what, right? Goes back to, I think I've mentioned it before in terms of Waller, the Emperor Doom Marvel graphic novel from the late 80s, where Doom, using the power of the Purple Man magnified around the world, controls the world. Like, he gets what he wants. He's the emperor of the entire planet. And he gets bored, and he ends up setting things up so the Avengers, Captain America, can break free, and then he gets defeated. He's sort of the architect of his own demise, because he's bored, basically. So yeah, would something similar happen to Amanda Waller? And the last son could have multiple meanings. Is it a son that Amanda Waller lost? So when she has this weapon that's powerful enough to take out the Superman family, she refers to it as her last son. You know, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But you could be right. That could be the mechanism for gaining the powers. Cause as I remember back to that Amazo arc from World's Finest, that super Amazo or whatever, I mean, Amazo himself, he has the powers of the Justice League. But then there was that super Amazo that was stealing the powers of other heroes in that arc. So again, that could be the Amazo tech, along with Failsafe tech and Mother Box tech, that allows this to happen. So then we get a week off, but then coming back on July 24th, I think I said this is bi-weekly, so yeah, that would be the schedule. It's going to be the Amazo robot known as Depth Charge that goes and not only steals Aquaman's powers and his throne, but he forces the entire populace of Atlantis to do what he says, or he's going to take their powers as well. So I assume that means he's going to, you know, take away their ability to breathe underwater, I guess. And obviously, if you live underwater, that's a big risk, right? You're going to do what you have to do to survive. It falls to Mira and the rest of the Aqua family to launch a secret rebellion to see if they can take out this Depth Charge. So again, when you look at the cover for this particular issue, you have just a fantastic looking robot here, that looks awesome, you know, a little reminiscent of a classic Aquaman costume with kind of the orange on top and the green on the bottom. And you can see one of the other covers there, where he's like swimming underwater. And, I'm not sure why Wonder Woman gets a cover in this series. But yeah, it doesn't. To me, just because Aquaman, I don't enjoy him as much as Superman, or the third one that we're going to talk about in a second. So this is probably the one I'm looking forward to the least in terms of characters, but it is written by John Layman. We've got art by Max Rayner. They're both super talented. So yeah, I mean, it's good that they're throwing this in there. Mark Waid's like, hey, we got to check in on Atlantis. Again, expanding the scope, making sure that everybody realizes this is kind of an event that affects the whole entire DC universe. That's going to include Aquaman.
Yeah. And, you know, you sort of allude to to me, I have a question on the larger scope of this story, because in my view, it's a little bit of, it skews the premise. Cause if the premise is to sort of take all the powers away from all the superheroes, well, Atlantis consists of an entire nation of people that have abilities. I mean, they don't have superpowers. That's their natural biological function, is to be able to swim underwater and have extra strength because they're Atlanteans. But Atlantis is clearly in opposition to the Trinity of Evil. And it makes me wonder, what are the world governments? Are the world governments working in conjunction? Is Amanda Waller taking over the U.S. government? Yeah, so I've got larger questions about the world, the DC DC world itself, you know, and it's kind of cool. Is it? So does Amanda Waller betray America? I mean, she sort of prided herself. A lot of her power comes directly from, you know, traditionally the presidency, arguably. I mean, so now is she suddenly, where does her power base come from? She decides to elevate herself amongst her, you know, the people. And now she's working in conjunction with genuine, a galaxy driven tyrant like Brainiac. And then battling against Atlantis. I mean, this is literally, these three are against the whole world. So it's really curious. Like how do all their agendas fail safe was obsessed with Gotham, but now he's obsessed with the world. Brainiac's obsessed with the universe, bringing order. Now he's obsessed with just Earth. And now Amanda Waller was just obsessed with being in control, but now she's obsessed with wiping it. So those are all very different agendas. And for them to come into play all at once, all centered on the planet Earth. And again, how do these three collaborate and work together? I think that's where the real drama can lie here. And if Mark Waid pulls off the characters and those interactions right, this could be a hell of a very good series. Because remember, we're dealing with arguably a brand new iteration of Brainiac with the Brainiac Queen. So you don't really have to worry about character continuity because these are genuinely new characters. Queen Brainiac is technically a new character. Failsafe is a relatively new character that you can play with. Although with Bruce Wayne's, background, and Amanda Waller, well, she's kind of a question mark right now. So again, the more I'm talking about it with you, the more potential I can see in this storyline. If they, again, it all comes down to the writing.
Yeah. I don't know that Brainiac Queen, new character, but I think it's going to be an amalgamation of Brainiac, like his consciousness taking over Lena Luthor. Because we know his body, we saw in this last week's Superman, his body sort of failing him. Right. So that's my speculation. I know nothing.
Hope you're right. That's cool. That's a cool idea.
Yeah. So we'll see. Next up, I go back and forth. I mean, The Last Sun, cool name, great cover, great look. But I mean, look at these covers, right? So Absolute Power Task Force 7, number 3, ends the month of July on July 30th. With an Amazo robot called Jade Stone, which, man, it just looks so cool. That design variant at the top there just looks fantastic. And then that bottom right cover, probably the, you know, close up of its face. But a couple things that really make this one kind of stand out for me. First of all, Jade Stone steals all the powers of the entire Justice Society. So it seems like it might be the most powerful of these Amazo constructs. But then it's compromised by Green Lantern Alan Scott, by his willpower, by his power ring. And it may be turning. It may be turning on Waller. It may be the key to the hero's victory over these this trinity of evil, if you will. But to top it all off, all these amazing story points and great visuals I'm talking about, written by Jeremy Adams, with art by Marco Santucci. So two incredibly talented creators and two of the nicest guys you can ever meet. Jeremy's a friend. I've met Marco several times. Him and his wife are both just lovely, lovely people. I am so excited for this one. Yeah, I really can't wait to check it out.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. I'm very excited about it. And I like the premise, and I like the idea that each individual, we're getting some opportunities for writers to tell different kinds of stories, but with just based on the same general premise, the idea that there's a separate team, maybe a separate evil force to take out the Titans, the JSA, the Trinity. I like this idea, and I like Jeremy Adams is of course he's writing Hal Jordan right now, but this is I like it. Will it continue to execute Waller's orders or execute free will as the remaining JSA members attempt to rescue to free their teammates and escape the Tower of Fate? I love the premise, and Jeremy Adams, I'm reminded of his last 3 or 4 issues of the Flash, not Jay Garrick Flash, but when he was scripting the Wally West Flash. He was very creative. He crammed a lot of very cool concepts in there. He created some new legacy characters, and he's very imaginative. And Jeremy is used to cramming a lot of really great story into a small number of pages. And it seems like here he's given more real estate to, work some pretty cool ideas in. And, even his last issue of Green Lantern, he's creating an epic adventure tale with the corrupt United Planets and the rebel force of the rogue Green Lanterns of Hal Jordan and Joe Mueline and what have you. And it's really a great time. I wish DC would give Jeremy Adams more work, but to his credit, he claims he keeps making proposals to them, and hopefully there'll be a place for him past September, fingers crossed. But I'm really looking forward to that. And yeah, I mean it's good. And again, I love the names here. Jadestone is a cool name, and I like that Alan Scott's involved there too. I'm not sure if Hal Jordan is in Absolute Power Task Force number 3, but yeah, fingers crossed. Again, it's these for once the solicitations are actually giving a little bit of revelation here. They feel like there's a little bit of substance in these solicitations that we can sort of chew on. And I wonder if that's intentional by DC. I hope it is, because whoever, because a lot of times when they write these solicitations, sometimes they don't do a great job, but I don't know. I want to give them credit here. There's enough in the solicitations to whet my appetite and get me excited.
Here's the thing, right? We saw Geoff Johns playing with the Golden Age characters, Justice Society, Stargirl and the Lost Children, what have you. He teamed up with Jeremy Adams and Tim Sheridan to do Flashpoint Beyond, which was sort of a mashup and led into that other stuff. We saw Jeremy Adams do Jay Garrick. I know Jeremy would love. I'm pretty sure he himself told me he would love to write Justice Society. I don't know that we're getting a continuation of Justice Society after Geoff Johns finally finishes it, whenever that is. But here's the thing, right? Like Jeremy's getting a chance to write Justice Society here. I wish I was like Jeff Bezos rich, and I would buy like, I don't know, 50,000 copies of this or 100,000 copies of this, make it the best-selling comic of the year, and be like, all right, DC, give Jeremy a Justice Society book. See, he sells it. It probably wouldn't work, right? They'd be like, oh, it's some guy who's artificially pumping up the numbers. But at the end of the day, what do you care? Do you care? I mean, you sold 100,000. What would it be? Probably like, I don't know, 140,000 copies. If I bought 100,000 and figure everybody else buys 40,000. Yeah. I mean, it'd be biggest comic of the year. Give Jeremy the book he deserves. So we've hinted at it. Finally, we're here to talk about it. Absolute Power Origins number 1 of 3. It's on sale on July 4th. I'm just going to say the other history of the DC universe, right? If you know what I'm talking about, if you've seen that, if you've read it, you know the power of John Ridley to tell personal stories. This is obviously a person of color. John Ridley's a person of color. The other history of the DC universe, focused on more of the marginalized, whether it be gender or ethnicity or whatever, it focused a little more on that. And that clearly is Amanda Waller, and that probably affects the character. And I've talked about it before when she was first created, so sort of being a cliche that, you know, large, overweight, angry black woman that Jon Ostrander created, and it's been tweaked over time. Obviously, she's much thinner, you know, now, and if anything, her temper's gotten worse. But I can't think of a writer who's better suited. And again, this was where when I saw these covers, especially the one that's there below me, if you're watching this on YouTube, where she looks like she's in a graveyard, she's cradling somebody. There's superimposed over the background is a close-up of her face, half of it in shadow. We see some tears coming down. Like really powerful imagery. And if anybody can make me care about Amanda Waller or feel bad for her, have sympathy for her, I think it's John Ridley. And it says right in the solicitation, you know, this tale, which led her to where she is and how she suffered a catastrophic loss and how she took that feeling of powerlessness, and made it a mission of vengeance, fueled by two words that changed her life. Obviously, those two words being never again. Like she's never going to allow this to happen again. Which, like I speculated earlier, yes, her son, her daughter, whoever it was that died, as an indirect consequence, probably of somebody with power. So a little different than the original one we had in 87, where, like I said, whoever it was, I think it was her son that was killed by gang violence and her feeling like superheroes didn't care about the little guy. This is a little more personal, right? Like if it was a fight between, you know, Superman and somebody, Superman and Giganto, let's say, and a building, you know, apartment building or something was damaged and collapsed, and her daughter died or her son died or what have you. You can see where that drive would come from. There needs to not be superpowers. It's too dangerous, blah, 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 whatever. But the short-sightedness of that being the, as we've seen, the threats are going to come, whether they come from Earth or somewhere else. The threats are going to come, and they're very dangerous and they're very powerful. And you need powerful people to be able to defend Earth. I think short-sightedness, right? But that's Amanda Waller for you. So yeah, really excited to see, can Ridley turn me around on Amanda Waller?
Yeah, and I just want to make some comments because Kit, I think John Ridley did a great job. You and I we reviewed all those issues of the other history of the DC Universe, and one of the things that stood out about that when he was whether he was writing about Katana or Black Lightning or Renee Montoya, who just those three as examples, of course, are characters of either color or deal with some degree of discrimination in their own right, their life. It wasn't. Some people didn't even give the other side of the DC universe or the other history of the DC universe. They never gave it a fair shot because they wrongly thought that this was like preaching or an agenda or this was trying to this was too political or agenda driven. But it wasn't. This it was. John Ridley is a he masterfully reviewed the entire history of those characters and he infused it with real world believable motivations that actually enriched the history that already existed over the last 30, 40 years of those characters. And that's what made it so powerful. Now, the one thing, and this is what I'm really curious, that this Secret Origins, Origin, Absolute Power Origins number one, if John Ridley is scripting this, I'm curious as to how he's going to do it because the other history of the DC Universe was very exposition heavy. It had more exposition than it had art. In fact, if that was one of my criticisms of it probably would have been it. I would have liked to have seen more art, but it was very exposition heavy. And I don't know. And the other history of the DC Universe wasn't as popular as it could be, as it ought to have been. And I'm very curious, is he going to be able to, you know, draw in? I hope he draws in the audience to his origin for Amanda Waller because, and I certainly would encourage people to pick up that issue because, as we said, I think the character central point, or at least you and I are, I'm at a minimum speculating that Amanda Waller is the character focus of this series. She's the to use the phrase, the heart and soul, she's the corrupted heart or the broken heart and soul of absolute power. And so getting to sympathize her, a sympathetic villain, or at least one that we can relate to, is so important. If anybody can pull it off, it's John Ridley. But I'm really curious to see, though, I think he's got to be careful. We need the right amount, not too much exposition, I don't know who's the artist. Did it
So,
sing with the
yeah, I was going to
artist?
mention Aletha Martinez is the artist. I think she's a perfect choice. And the other thing, don't forget that Ridley also did the was it? I can't remember what it's called now. The Luke or the Jace Fox Batman series. What was it? Just Batman?
That's right. Yeah, the next Batman or
Whatever. So, you know, we know, and you know, he wrote comics. You know, previously he's done some stuff for, I think it was Wildstorm at the time. His can't remember the name of it now, but it's this sort of patriotic societal commentary, if you will. I mean, he wrote that before he wrote his screenplay that he won an Academy Award for, 12 Years a Slave. So he can write sequential. You're right in saying very expositional for other history of the DC universe, but I think that was a product of covering so much material. And here he probably gets to sort of decide, you know, how big of a story, how big of the scope, how far back with Amanda Waller and that sort of thing that he can go, or that he wants to go. So yeah, I have faith that it won't be too exposition heavy. But you're right. It's gotta succeed in making her sympathetic or at least relatable, you know, at least.
Well, it is 3 issues long, so he's going to have at least 60 pages to tell. That should be plenty of pages for him to tell a full story to get us into the head of Amanda Waller.
Yeah, I would think so. So last thing we'll mention is Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, they all have tie-ins in their regular series in the month of July. So starting on July 2nd, it's the 150th issue of Batman for the latest volume, I guess. I mean, it's not really. Batman is way above 150 issues. So you've got Dennis Cowan joining Zdarsky and Jorge Jimenez on the main story. But then it's the solicitation says Zdarsky is teaming up with Mike Hawthorne for an Absolute Power tie-in. So does that mean that the main story doesn't tie in? I would think that, you know, based on the scope of Absolute Power, that it would all, and the fact that Failsafe's been in Batman, that's been the driving story arc for a long time, that the whole issue would tie in. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. But the little clue we have for the Mike Hawthorne Zdarsky story that is specifically called out as an Absolute Power tie-in sounds amazing. It's Batman and Catwoman planning a heist, what we're told is the most dangerous heist of their lives, and the target of the heist is Amanda Waller herself. So you're losing the battle of Absolute Power. Why not go and try to, you know, cut off the head of the snake, as it were, and capture Amanda Waller herself? So yeah, really excited to check that out.
Yeah, I very much am looking forward to that because I will say this, as much as we've both been very hard on Amanda Waller. One of the things that DC has succeeded in doing is I bloody well want Amanda Waller to get beat once in a while because it's such a cliche for her to always win. Even when she loses, she wins. It's getting tiresome already. Even it would be like if a hero never, ever, 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 ever gets defeated. I mean, even Batman loses in fact, Batman loses quite a bit. He just wins in the end. And sometimes he wins only because he has the help of friends. Amanda Waller, she's always wins. She's always corrupting. She's always in control. And even when she loses, she wins. I hope that this series, in addition to creating sympathy for Amanda Waller and getting me to maybe at least respect the villainy, sort of like Darth Vader. I love hating Darth Vader in Star Wars. Well, I want to love hating Amanda Waller as opposed to resenting every time I see Amanda Waller. But I want Amanda Waller to get beat. You want to humanize Amanda Waller? Give her some losses, some genuine losses, so that I can at least respect her when she comes back. When she comes back, she's never really, I've never really perceived her as having a loss. And because of that, she feels like a big, black, fat Mary Sue sometimes, you know? It's a little bit frustrating. You want me to, I mean, I, and it's, it might sound counterintuitive, but as comic book readers, it's not counterintuitive. You want me to get sympathy for a character, like a character, humanize them more. And one way to do that is to have them lose once in a while, get their ass kicked once in a while, fail in an objective once in a while. And that hasn't been Amanda Waller. But so I like the idea of Batman and Catwoman getting one up on Amanda Waller. I kind of like that. And, you know, I don't want it to be just at the end. But anyways, I'm getting a little bit, I'm getting more hyped as I'm talking about these things, talking to you. So I'm glad we're doing this.
Yeah, next up, Wonder Woman number 11. So this was really interesting to me. So July 17th, Wonder Woman. Tom King only has 12 issues of Wonder Woman, or supposedly he's only writing 12 issues of Wonder Woman. One of them's taken up the penultimate issue, the next to last issue of the series is taken up by this tie-in. I almost think Tom's going to get another issue or two. Because it specifically says her quest for the truth is placed on hold. So that's telling me his regular story is being set aside as Wonder Woman is face to face with Waller's latest toy, quote unquote, an amazing robot ready to take all her powers. And she has to do whatever she can to survive. And she enlists the help of the Justice League Dark to help her with that, which we've seen Justice League Dark kind of be affiliated with Wonder Woman, most recently over the last couple of years, DC trying to lean into more of the magic of Wonder Woman, the magical side of her. And that a lot of that was driven by James Tynion, fantastic writer. I don't mind any of that. But I do find it interesting, the timing, the next to last issue. And we're getting Tom King still writing it, but Tony Daniel and Belen Ortega are handling the art, which they're both fantastic artists. And I'm excited for the story because I want to see what Tom does with it. But at the same time, it's like, of all the series that don't need to be interrupted, right, that need all the real estate they can to try to add to that connective tissue, as we talked about on the DC Spotlight this last week, it's Wonder Woman, right? Like, he can't afford to lose any pages. So I guess we'll see if Tom gets an extra issue based on this, or maybe he knew way back when and scripted it, his story for 11 issues. I don't know, but I feel like his series probably needs 15 issues. I feel like, to not feel forced at the end. I guess we'll see. What are your thoughts on this? Well,
I will say that I do like, I don't know exactly what the, you interviewed, I'm trying to remember your full interview with Tom King and Daniel Semper. I know that when Tom King scripted that, when Wonder Woman's battle against all those rogues in issue 6, I think it was, that was amazing. I love that. The art was fantastic and the battle sequences were great. And so Tom King is good at doing sort of the vignette, the one shot funds, one shot adventurous, action packed story when he puts his mind to it. And when he's, of course, he's always gifted with the best artists, and Tony Daniel is certainly one of them, with Belen Ortega there. So I'm really curious. I like what I'm hearing. Probably Justice League Dark. The only way how do you take away Wonder Woman's powers? She gets them from the gods. So there obviously clearly is a mythological or a magical element there. So, there's a lot there to play with, but if you're only, it's only like 22 or maybe it's 33 pages, but that's still, I wish there was more pages because I love the idea. I just wish there was more real estate to play with, but I like it. It sounds cool. And I'm sure, I don't know what the Sovereign's going to be doing. I guess the Sovereign's just taking a break but that's a side issue there, but I like it. And I love the cover, by the way, with the magic lasso wrapped around Wonder Woman with Amazon in the background there. It looks pretty cool. And I want to give a compliment to all the covers that I'm seeing, because all the covers would appear to relate to the content of the comic books, which I really like. And I'm glad they're focusing on the cover A's by the looks of things more so than necessarily all variant covers, which often I find are misleading as to the content.
Yeah, as far as what Sovereign's doing, I'm in my head canon, he's probably just chilling and watching like a Nick at Night marathon of his 50 sitcoms in black and white, where with the gender norms that he worships. I'm really excited to check that out as well. And then we're going to talk about Superman, which is the last one that ties in as well. But real quick on that, this does, it goes back to what we said earlier about this feeling more like a traditional DC event. Like, there may not be enough pages, enough real estate in Wonder Woman 11 to finish that story. But how great would it be if it really was like an old classic tie-in, right? Where the start of the fight or the start of the Wonder Woman plotline starts in Wonder Woman 11, and then it continues in Absolute Power 2, Absolute Power 3, Absolute Power 4. A true way to have it tie in rather than the anthologies that we haven't liked that they've done recently to tie into series. Like, this is the way that they used to be, right? Like, I'm not reading Absolute Power, but I'm reading Wonder Woman, right? And I pick up Wonder Woman 11 and I read it and I go, oh, wow, this seems really cool. Now I'm going to go read Absolute Power to get the end of the story. And if I don't care, I forget about it and I just pick up Wonder Woman 12 the next month and finish out that story. That's the way they should be done. So, Yeah, we're a little worried there might not be enough real estate, but that's we got to keep that in mind that it may not be resolved. The Wonder Woman may, story may not be resolved. The heist story may not be resolved in that Batman backup tie-in. It may be resolved in the main Spine series. We'll have to wait and see. But the final one, it's also on sale on July 17th, Superman 16. Jamal Campbell is coming back as the artist for this issue. Hopefully he stays on for a while. I remains to be seen. He's a fantastic artist for Superman. It is written by regular series writer Joshua Williamson, and we're told that due to the assault by the Last Son, the Amazo weapon that Amanda Waller unleashed on Superman, he's injured, he's powerless, he's retreated to the Fortress of Solitude, and as his home becomes a refuge for the survivors that have lost their powers, he's got to go on a dangerous mission into a realm of magic. And we all know Superman's vulnerable to magic. I mean, he has no powers. He's vulnerable to everything right now. But who's the best person to go with him into the on this mission in the realm of magic? Well, it's Zatanna, who really is becoming a favorite character of mine. I've said a bunch of times, I really would love for Batman and Zatanna to get together. I like that relationship so much more than Batman and Catwoman. And I'll keep sh shipping them, as the kids say these days. But yeah, I'm excited for this. Jamal Campbell drawing Zatanna, she's going to look great. She's going to look beautiful. And I always love when Superman undertakes missions when he doesn't have his powers, because people are like, Superman, he's so boring. He's so powerful. He can do anything. It shows the heroism of the character when he doesn't have powers and he's still putting himself out there. He's still risking his life. He's still trying to do the right thing. So, really looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, and it's another example of how Mark Waid, who's spearheading, or at least I'm sure, it sounds like he probably created the general plot template for this series. It's one thing that we DC readers, we love. We like when you think outside the box when you put a team together. I mean, this is if this is a genuinely new event, i.e. a crisis, I should use a different word. Let's just say an evil event that has occurred that the heroes have never faced before. It makes sense that you got to have different heroes and a different mix up of heroes together to solve the problem and collaborate. Zatanna and Superman, I like that idea. And it's perfect. Superman's greatest weakness, he has an ally who represents his greatest weakness, and that's Zatanna, whose greatest strength is magic. But of course, she's certainly not invulnerable like Superman. So, I mean, it just makes sense. And we had Wonder Woman with the Justice League Dark in the other series, and we got Batman, we got and even if these new this new lone the this new Last Son, it's pretty cool. I'm kind of curious to know at the end of this, because the elephant in the well, in my mind, I'm always thinking to myself that we've had the Titans replace the Justice League, and this is a world that doesn't have a Justice League, but it has the Titans, and we've had some major events here where the Titans really haven't really, other than Beast World, which was okay, but not really memorable. I'm wondering if on the horizon will absolute power. Will the ending of Absolute Power finally wake the world up to say, no offense, Titans, but we need a Justice League? Will we get a Justice League back at the end of this? But I speculate and I digress.
Well, we know this is leading to the absolute universe or whatever they want, or just absolute line, the one that Scott Snyder's show running, although apparently he's taking a very hands-off approach, that's coming later in the year, September. So yeah, we'll see how that all plays out. They're definitely leaning in. We talked most recently, you mentioned it on our last DC Spotlight that we do every Tuesday. Usually this week it was released on later on Tuesday because we couldn't record on Monday. But the DC sales have been hurting. Hopefully, this being a traditional DC event, it brings some readers back into the fold. It gets people excited. I switched back to the Task Force 7 issue 1 screen here if you watch this on YouTube. And the reason I did that is to talk one more time about Last Son. One other thing I wanted to mention, you can see a couple of covers, a design cover, and then more of a painted portrait type cover of him. How amazing would a McFarlane toy of Last Son be? I kind of want a McFarlane toy of Jadestone as well, for that matter, because he looks really
Yeah.
cool.
We might get one. You never know,
Also,
right?
yeah.
Yeah.
And the depth charge or whatever, the Atlantean one, I could see him getting one. I mean, we didn't we get They released DC Universe. I don't know if it's necessarily McFarlane, but this wouldn't be unprecedented for a character that, shows up in a relatively small amount of books, one big event. All the Batmans from the Dark Multiverse that were mashed up, we got those, the Devastator and the Flash mashup and whatever. So I don't see any reason why we couldn't. I mean, these are again just fantastic designs. So anyway, we're really excited for this. Rocky and I haven't talked about it, but I imagine that when the time rolls around, we'll probably be maybe not talking about the Absolute Power books in a regular DC Spotlight episode, but rather doing a deeper dive in a separate episode. But if time always becomes a factor, we both have day jobs and families, what have you. So we'll talk about that and when it gets closer, but we'll definitely be providing a little more in-depth coverage than we normally do in terms of this event, because it seems like it's going to be really impactful and have a lot of consequences going forward. So again, you can go take a look at the show notes to check all the dates. We know for sure Absolute Power Free Comic Book Day, it's going to be on Free Comic Book Day. So you're going to want to go to your shop that Saturday, May 4th. A lot of the other tie-ins for July and other series for July are going to be available for pre-order starting on April 19th, Friday, April 19th. So again, check with your local retailer to be sure you don't miss out on any of this stuff. I mean, being that it's a big DC event, they're probably going to order, a little more than they usually do, but times are tight for retailers right now, and that might not be the case. And if this sells really well, if it does bring lapsed readers back in or gets readers that typically don't read DC excited, you could find yourself on the short end of the stick, not able to find copies. So pre-order with your retailer, so you're guaranteed to get the books that you want. So any last thoughts as we're winding down here, Rocky?
Well, I thank you, DC. I mean, I thank you for I think the timing of this announcement was good. It came at the right time, quite frankly, particularly since there was some disappointing news with DC sales and all the other with the Marvel Ultimate line and and a vibrant independent comic publishing world right now with the Energon Universe and G.I. Joe and Image, and DC needs this. It needs a win going into the summer. And this sounds better than I had hoped, to be honest with you. So I'm more optimistic now, and I needed this. And hey, man, if you can actually make me think, geez, maybe Amanda Waller is a character I want to read more about, despite the fact that I've seen a lot of her in the last year. Hey, man, all the power to him. And I'm definitely going to be checking this out. I'm definitely going to be, I'm in that previews magazine, and I'm talking to my retailer, and I'm saying, make sure I get this, 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 and this. Anything with Absolute Power. I got to say, I'm initially probably going to pre-order all this stuff. Hopefully, it won't, I'm going to be optimistic. It's I'm going to be optimistic, and we're going to be reviewing it every step of the way. And people can certainly tune into the Comic Source podcast and to our respective YouTube channels, and enjoy the ride.
Yeah, I would say last event I went all in on was Future State. I was hugely disappointed in that. I got burned, and I haven't dipped my toe in.
Well, we got some good covers. There was a couple of good variant covers there.
That's true. That's true. So we'll see. I don't know that anybody can make me want to read more Amanda Waller. But if this allows some relatability and sympathy, I'm all for it. I too am much more excited after this press release today. And a lot of it has to do with the art, actually, like these visuals, right? Like so much of comics, it's equally story and art for me, always has been. I think you can't have one without the other. And all along we've been teased with a few images, but it's been a lot of kind of lip service. Hey, it's Amanda Waller centric story, and the villains and heroes lose their powers and what have you. And that's all kind of interesting. But when you throw in this fantastic art, the great designs for these Depth Charge and Last Sun and whatever the other one was called, I can't remember now. It's fantastic. Jade Stone is the other one. That just gets me that much more excited to check them out. So that's gonna do it for this episode, everybody. Don't forget, check out the show notes. If you have any questions, you can see the full DC press release there, and let your retailer know that you want to pre-order these books. So we appreciate you joining us as always. Don't forget to head over to Rocky's channel, Comic Space Boom! Exclamation point on YouTube. That's where you can see our DC spotlights. We referenced the one from this last week several times. We're there every Tuesday, usually soon to be Wednesdays, because that's the other thing that we didn't mention. I'm glad I remembered. When this starts, when Absolute Power One releases on July 3rd, That's a Wednesday. That's when DC's switching back their release date to Wednesday, so it'll line up with all the other books. So we will switch our DC Spotlight to Wednesday starting that week as well. So again, everybody, don't forget, go and subscribe to Rocky's channel, ring the notification bell, leave some comments. Once you've checked out the episode, we love to interact with people there. We appreciate the support as always, and we'll talk to you next time.
Catch you later.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.